Right to Speak, discussions on social justice and advocacy. This is episode 35, and I'm your host, Salvatore. On today's episode, we'll be talking with Alyssa Chermez, who is a friend and a colleague of mine at a girls' shelter that I work at called Arbonne. Alyssa will be talking to us about the values of child and youth care workers and the work that we all do, and generally about the field. Alyssa, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Alyssa. I am a child and youth care worker at Arbonne House. It's a small group home in Toronto. I've been working in the field since about 2012. I've been with Arbonne for about 5 or 6 years. I'm also a part-time prof at Sheridan College, teaching in the child and youth care program. And I'm continuing education, doing my master's in September at Ryerson in child and youth care as well. So, yeah, that's me.
Well, congratulations on getting accepted for your master's.
Thanks.
And I'm very excited to have you on the show. I know we've both had conversations around the value of the work that we do. So I'm excited for us to get the conversation started. Mm-hmm. Let's just dive right into it. What does a child and youth care worker do? And how might that be different from what social workers do? Is there a difference?
I think that there is a difference, and because I actually have a background with both, so I originally did my advanced diploma as a CYC, and I felt like with that, there was a lot more emphasis placed on building a relationship as opposed to the education that I received as an SSW when I did my degree. It almost feels like, I mean, we're taught so from the very beginning that we're in school that, you know, your relationship with the youth is everything. And, you know, you can't do a lot of valuable work if there is no relationship. So that's something that I really felt that I got the difference, at least education-wise. And I mean, as a CYC, like, I mean, our training and, like, our working and counseling is so informal sometimes, whereas I think that SSWs necessarily, it's more clinical, or at least that's the way that it appears to be. And I mean, if you're working with children and youth, like, it's not always good to be in a clinical setting. You know, sometimes it's good to just have a conversation over a game of basketball, or, you know, I've had some of the greatest conversations cooking a meal. Whereas I think, you know, training that I was given as an SSW, that wasn't necessarily the guidance that I was given.
Right.
So I felt like, you know, CYCs, they're given so much more freedom and leeway with the way that they want to incorporate, like, a therapeutic practice. And it teaches you almost to be more therapeutic just in your day-to-day interactions.
It sounds like, you know, one of the grounding, I guess, values of the work that we do is, like, kind of meeting the young person where they're at.
Absolutely.
And that sounds to me a little bit different from, and I'm not to downplay the work that social workers do, because they do very important work.
Yeah.
But, you know, it kind of sounds like what you're kind of saying is that, you know, for social workers, it's more of that, you know, formal, you know, let's set up a meeting and we'll talk about, you know, the issues possibly that you're going through, how your day is going, where, you know, CYCs, we'll do it on a walk in the park or something, right? And that's just as impactful. I would argue maybe it's a bit more,
impactful
because, you know, I found that youth don't tend to share as much as they do when they're in an informal setting.
I mean, and sometimes it's something as simple as just there's no eye contact. Yeah. When you're walking side by side with somebody, it's less intimidating to be looking at, you know, you're not looking at them in the eye. So, I mean, like I said, like, those are just very simple, valuable moments that can manifest or start a relationship.
Right. I always find it interesting, though, that, like, at least here in Ontario, that CYCs are kind of held at a lesser level than social workers. And for me, you know, I think we should be held at the same level. You know, we have that specialty, you know, training on how to work with you know, young people. Like, I did my degree at Humber, and that's 4 years of child development, therapeutic practice, just for working with young people, where social workers have to have that broader, you know, understanding to work with different types of populations, mm-hmm. because they can. They can go in and work with someone, let's say, with Alzheimer's, right? Right. We can't do that. But for me, you know, we have a deeper understanding of, like, what child development is.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I also felt that as a CYC, there was a lot more emphasis placed on understanding mental health. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you're thinking about the type of clients that we serve, and at least the type of clients that come through Erebon House, I would say 90% of the clients that we get all have mental health. They're not necessarily the behavioral clients that we used to have 10 years ago or something, or mm-hmm. historically that this, you know, this establishment used to have. So I felt like I valued that piece of education that I got.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, for me, what's is so interesting is that our field's not accredited. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, for me, it's frustrating because I know the work that we do, and I know that sometimes it's hard work. I mean, mm-hmm. we deal with sometimes what we can classify as hard to reach youth, and mm-hmm. not everyone can do that. At least here in Ontario. I mean, I know there's other parts of, you know, Canada that CYCs are, we're not accredited, but we're still held at a, you know, a certain, yeah, yeah, higher level.
Well, I mean, and I'll be totally honest. So after I completed my diploma as a CYC, I was a little bit worried about where this field was going. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I ventured and I did a little bit of social work, and I did my degree based in social work. And then after completing it, I just felt like this isn't where my heart is.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what if my career choice isn't an accredited career? Why can't I be part of that change? Mm-hmm. You know, why can't I be part of that process to make it happen? So, I mean, I've even had people question, like, why are you going to do your master's as a CYC? Why aren't you going to do your MSW? And, you know, my heart is as a CYC. I have different beliefs. And, you know, like, I just felt like the CYC do, like, master's is probably where I should be.
Right.
And I mean, like I said, it just felt right.
Let's, oh, here we go. Okay, so we're not going to fully change gears, but, you know, some people have said that, you know, CYCs are basically glorified babysitters, and all we do is just, you know, sit in a house, and we just make sure, you know, the youth are A-okay, and, you know.
No one's fighting, no one's dying.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what do you say to that? Yeah.
I'll be totally honest and transparent. I actually had this exact statement from my own dad. Mm. And up until recently, I really don't think that he had any idea exactly the type of population that we deal with. And, you know, when he said, so when I had to explain to him, like, placement, like, I did my first placement here, and he basically said to me, so, like, you're a babysitter. And I was like, no. So, you know, like, I think it's about explaining exactly what a CYC does, and, you know, explaining this is a population that I deal with. Like, you know, when you bring in different names, like, you know, my clients are from Children's Aid, or, you know, like, I have clients who have parents that struggle with addiction. I think that people really paint a picture in their heads of the kind of clients that we mm-hmm. deal with, and potentially how difficult our jobs can be. And I explain it to everybody, and I say, you know, there's 100 really good days, and then there's 5 really bad days. Yeah. And those 5 really bad days can make up for 100 good days.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what it is, because, I mean, I love coming here. Sometimes it's really easy, and sometimes it's really bad, and sometimes there's really challenging days. But, you know, every day in every situation, I think, as workers, we grow, sure. And, you know, the agency grows and the clients grow. So, I mean, as long as someone's growing from it, then I think that, you know, there's something to learn.
So, you know, I struggle with this sometimes. How do you explain what a CYC does?
I usually revert back to, you know, the outcomes that we're trying to teach in this program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I go back and say, you know, sometimes the basic life skills that you have, if I'm explaining it to somebody, my clients don't have that. Mm. You know, my clients don't necessarily know how to do their laundry. My clients don't know how to cook a meal or how to follow a recipe or even where to begin, where to find the recipe. You know, job skills. I say to them, it's everything that your parents should have taught you that they didn't. And you know what? I go about it teaching them in a therapeutic way and come at them not as a parental relationship, but more as a positive, almost like a positive role model. Mm-hmm. And use, you know, your relationship to your advantage. I mean, we're really lucky that we get to have fun with our clients. And then, I mean, you use that to your advantage, and that's how you incorporate learning into it. Because I also say that I think every moment has the opportunity to be teachable, and has the opportunity, you know, to foster some sort of growth. And I, even when I tell my students that every interaction you have with your clients needs to be meaningful.
Yeah.
Every single one. Because they know that they've come across so many people in their lives who they can't trust, or who have let them down, and you don't want to be another person to add to that list.
I agree. Absolutely. You know, and even, you know, I'm relief here. And even every conversation I have with one of our youth, it's very, like, intentional. I'm very careful, you know, thinking through of what I'm going to say, because mm-hmm. whatever I say is going to have a huge, you know, impact. Like, I'm not their friend. I'm not going to be like, yo, go hook up with that person or whatever, right? Like, it has to be very intentional and, you know, making sure that they're gaining those skills that you're mentioning that are so important. You know, yeah, go on.
I was going to say, like, I don't even think that people necessarily realize that's how hard it is sometimes to have conversations. Yeah. Because, I mean, like you said, we have to think about everything we say twice before we say it. And, you know, there always has to be something meaningful coming out of our mouths. And that in itself is exhausting because you're rethinking everything.
You know, for me, because you're bringing up the skills piece, you know, what makes it very difficult for our work is that we have to really, you know, make it second nature to think about, like, the intentional type of conversations we need to have, you know. So, like, I came in this morning and there was a youth telling me about, like, their tattoos, and, you know, they didn't go to a tattoo parlor, so part of that conversation, if it was a friend, would be like, you know, what the hell are you doing? Like, don't be stupid, blah, blah, blah. That's not the conversation, you know, we would typically have with the youth, though. It would be more of, you know, was it safe? Why did you go there? Did you see them break the needle, et cetera?
Absolutely. Yeah.
What do you feel are some of the important skills that CYCs need to have?
It's funny because this is actually the class that I teach at Sheridan. It's all about your skills. I really place a lot of emphasis on respect. I mean, a lot of these youth don't know even what it means to be respected, or how to show that, or what does respect look like.
Right.
I mean, coming from any adult, but even your CYC, how do you respect yourself? So I place a lot of emphasis on, you know, respect, accountability. I think that it's super important to be able to own up to your own stuff. If I did something wrong, you know, I'm going to say I did something wrong. And also, I mean, taking into consideration that a lot of the skills that you're going to be showing as a CYC, hopefully your youth learn from you. Like, it's about mirroring.
Sure.
Also, I mean, like, being able to actively listen to a client. People don't understand how to actually actively listen. You know, it goes all the way down to the way that your body posture is. You know, are you sitting closed off? Is your body open? Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. And, I mean, patience. I don't think that I really understood. I mean, in regards to patience, I don't really think that I understood what it meant to be patient. Or what it would take internally. You know, like, when you have a client who's, I don't want to say they're coming at you, but, you know, like, they're pestering you for you know, ridiculous things, or, you know, there's, let's say there's a knock on the door and you're like, hey, I'm meeting with somebody, and, you know, they're knocking on the door and I need this, I need that, I need that, but realistically they don't need it from me. It's just, you know,
right,
they're just doing it. It takes a lot internally to be able to self-talk and, you know, just breathe, take a second, or if a client, you know, if you can notice that a client's making a lot of bad decisions, I mean, it's not your responsibility to make those decisions for them, mm-hmm. but it's your responsibility to guide them into not making those bad decisions again. But sometimes internally, I'm like, what the heck are you right. doing? Like, smart enough, girlfriend. Yeah. Like, what are you doing? So a lot of self-talk and stuff like that, you know. And I mean, that takes a lot of patience. And I mean, sometimes you have clients that simply just, I guess, get on your nerves a little bit. They get under your skin. And I mean, it's going to happen in life, period. So learning how to deal with that. And empathy. I mean, I don't think people necessarily just know how to be empathetic. I think that it's learned continuously throughout your life. Because, of, you know, each situation, it's very hard to know how to respond empathetically. And even when I'm teaching, you know, I try and teach my students every response almost needs to come from an empathetic place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of them struggle with that, but I explain to them, like I said, I'm still learning how to do that. Sometimes it's really hard to respond empathetically and make it sound genuine. And I mean, and that's another skill, being genuine. I mean, clients are, especially these kinds of clients that we deal with, are able to know who's real and who's not. And, you know, who's here because they want to be here and who's here for a paycheck. So, I mean, like, I'll talk to them the same way that I would talk to anybody else. However, with a more therapeutic background.
Right.
With a more empathetic response. But using, you know, similar language to them and, you know, coming in not necessarily dressed like I'm here to do my job. Like, I come in dressed more comfortable. You know, I cook for them and make them feel like this is, you know, this is their home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to contribute to making that a home environment as much as I can. And, I mean, that's something that I think that youth really appreciate, because nobody wants anybody fake around them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's one of actually the one thing I say on interviews mm-hmm. is, you know, I'm real with youth. Like, I have that authenticity with that. Like, if I'm working with the youth and they love basketball, I'm not going to go research about basketball and pretend like mm-hmm. I'm this, like, I can care less about sports, to be honest. And, you know, and the youth know that about me, right? But we'll connect another way. And we don't have to like the same things to connect and have that therapeutic relationship.
Yeah.
But I truly do think, you know, both of my jobs, you know, here and at 4 Youth Initiative, I found that being that, you know, authenticity, being real with youth is really key to building that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
I mean, like, I work, this is a girls, you know, shelter group home, like, yeah. you know, and there's a lot that I, you know, don't connect with, right? There's a lot of things I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they know that about me, though. They know that as much as I know about periods, you know, and I know about the wings, you know. That's as far as my knowledge is going to go with that, but that's okay.
Yeah, right? And I mean, I think they can appreciate that you can make a joke about it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not awkward. Yes, I mean, just I think they appreciate all of that, you know, being genuine and the authenticity and the transparency. And I mean, you know, if you can turn something like kind of awkward into a joke, like talking about, you know, a menstrual cycle, that's not something that you would necessarily know too much about. I mean, you've got sisters, but
like, that's it.
Yeah,
I know there's cramps, but
I'm sorry, do you need Tylenol or Advil? Which one works?
Right. Yeah, and I think I've also, you know, learned to really appreciate self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I was, you know, doing my CYC degree, there was self-awareness implemented in every aspect, you know, in, you know, the 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to, you know, really complain about it. Like, why do I need to write reflection for mm-hmm. every class? Like, what does self-reflection have to do with research?
Yeah.
What does it have to do with program development?
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, I've learned to appreciate that because I can see it. I can see its link and I can see why you know, being self-aware is important for developing programs, important for even doing research, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, it's like knowing your triggers too. Sometimes, and I explain this to my students too, that, you know, for the next 3 years that you're going to be in school here, this is like 3 years of reflection. And, you know, you're going to do so much personal growth in the next 3 years, and you're going to learn things about yourself that you probably would never even know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I complained about it too when I was in school. Like, I was like, why is there a reflection in every class? Like, why, you know, I had a whole class just on doing reflection, and it drove me crazy. But I mean, I really found myself in that program, and I really found, you know, these are things that make me, you know, maybe a little bit more anxious. These are things I'm not comfortable talking about yet. But then the work that you do in the classroom and you know, through all your projects and stuff is only going to benefit you in your field, because you'll know exactly what, you know, you're comfortable talking about, what you're not comfortable right. talking about, what your niche is. And, you know, you'll know what to work on.
And I think, you know, with that self-reflection, you'll also know what, you know, framework or therapeutic practice you come from, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very, like I was saying, like, how I work with youth is very real with them, but I'm also very blunt with them. Mm-hmm. Like, I maybe not so much here because I'm not here that often, but, you know, my other job, like, I just have to give them a look and they'll stop. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that's where I come from. They know that, you know, I'm very real with them, but mm-hmm. that also comes with a little bit of sass and that blunt, like, you know, don't, you know, mess around with the rules here, because you know that I'll give you a consequence.
Yeah, they're going to be enforced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to switch gears just a little bit again. What do you think are some of the gaps and challenges currently in the child and youth care field, and how can we address those gaps and challenges?
I think the biggest challenge right now, and a gap coincided, are that we often, especially here at Erebon, so we get clients usually that are referred to us around 17, mm-hmm. Even older than that at times. And I mean, at 17, they have to be gone out of here by the time they're 18. It's really hard to do meaningful work in a short period of time. You know, they come to us, and sometimes they come to us not knowing any skills at all. And, you know, it's my responsibility to make sure that they know how to cook, clean, do their laundry. They're able to navigate through the city. They have a job. You know, they get experience. Their education is taken care of in a year. And, I mean, if you really think about it, a lot of these youth, say they come to us at 17, have had 17 years of abuse. Mm-hmm. Whether that's, you know, physical, sexual, emotional, anything. Am I really going to establish a relationship, a meaningful relationship? It's going to take me a couple months. I mean, at minimum, depending on their youth and their background. And then, you know, then I need to start the real work with them.
Yeah.
And I mean, and sometimes that's really hard. And when you put a time limit on that, they're coming here at 17 or a little bit over 17, you're almost planning for their discharge the day they arrive.
Yeah.
Which is really hard because, you know, we're setting you up to leave and then you haven't even arrived yet.
Yeah.
It's really sad. And it's sometimes it's really hard to, you know, get a youth to buy into the program when they know at the end of the day, I have to be out of here in a year or less.
Yeah.
So what's the point of building a relationship with these people? And, you know, let me just get what I need to get from being here. And, you know, I think it's our job as CYCs and, you know, and it's encompassed in our culture at Erebon, to teach these youth that, you know, you can trust us. And, you know, we're here to guide you through the process. We're not going to make the choices for you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, let's try and love the crap out of these kids in the year that they're here. Because, you know, just because, like, we run an aftercare program, and you know that. And just because after the year they're gone from here doesn't mean it stops. Right. You know, we're still going to help you. You're just not going to be in this house. So I think that's really hard. And I mean, after that, I mean, where do these kids go?
Yeah, like, I struggle with that all the time. Yeah. And it's like, what happens next, right? And, you know, some of the youth here, or anywhere really, it's going to take a while to really pick up those important life skills. Mm-hmm. And we may see the impact of them, you know, not wanting to learn now.
Yeah.
But they're not going to see it in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, some youth just look at the next day and that's their future, right? They're not looking, they're not thinking like a year, 3 years in time, like, oh, I need to know how to cook because I'll be on my own.
And like, that's the way that they've almost been conditioned to function on a day-to-day basis is, you know, we're not thinking about a year or even a week from now. We're thinking about how am I going to survive till tomorrow?
Yeah.
And you know, it's really hard to break that thought process. And I mean, if you really think about it, we're in Toronto. I mean, how many of us working full-time adults can afford a one-bedroom apartment?
Right.
Or, you know, how do I need to be on a waiting list for 10 years to get housing? Because at this point, I'll get housing when I'm 30 or, you know, when I'm 28 years old, if I'm lucky, if you're one of these youths. So it's like you put them on access point lists the day that they get into the house, but is it really beneficial? Because they're not going to get housing, you know, potentially until they're in their late 20s.
Right.
So, I mean, hard.
I still live at home with my parents.
Cause, so do I, right? Because, like, you know,
we can't afford it, right? And here we are. We're expecting as soon as, you know, someone turns 18, 19, that, okay, well, now you got to do it
figure
on your
it
own,
out.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm 30, like...
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. It's... for me, it's like an unrealistic expectation that I think... Mm-hmm. Well, I think the government, in a sense, has really put it on it. I don't think when these policies are created, there's that full understanding of, like, what it's like on the ground,
mm-hmm.
right? And I don't normally like to use this saying, but I had someone that I used to work with say, you know, we have to kind of think of it that these youth that we work with are our own kids,
mm-hmm.
right? And how would we treat our own kids, right?
Yeah.
And, you know... I don't always like to look at it that because there's, I think there's certain things that come with that.
Absolutely.
But, you know, there is some truth to that. You know, if we have our own kid, we're going to want to make sure that they have all these skills mm-hmm. that before they move out, right, that they're stable enough to live on their own, that they've graduated mm-hmm. high school, you know, and have employment and all those pieces.
They have an understanding of budgeting.
Yes.
You know, and you want to make sure that your clients aren't going to rely off of eating Kraft dinner every day.
Right.
You know, let's teach them where food banks are. Let's teach them how to coupon. Let's teach them how to budget. Like, everything that you can possibly teach them, because it's all going to benefit them at one point or another.
Yeah. And for me, I found once you get caught up in this, like, even not having, like, meaningful employment, get caught up in, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong just working for retail, but
mm-hmm.
let's say, you know, retail's your thing and you get caught up in that, you know, and then you're living in a basement apartment and you're renting, it's very hard to get out of that cycle,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. I mean, especially when, if once a youth or, I mean, whoever gets comfortable in that, but let's think about our youth, once you're comfortable with that, you know, that's it. They found comfort.
Yeah.
And we're not there to hold their hand to get out of that. So the chances of them getting out of it are a lot slimmer than someone like, you know, you or I who, you know, have had skills and we built upon those skills
right.
for our entire lives.
I have two more questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is going to be a reflective question.
Nice.
What has been the most important lesson you've learned so far in your career?
It would probably be that... There's probably two things. One of them would be that the learning is continuous. The learning will never end. I mean, every client that you encounter, every coworker that you encounter will teach you something. And I don't think that I really... I mean, I remember my professors telling us that in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really understood it until, you know, you work with some difficult clients, and then you work with some difficult people. And it's about moving past that and, you know, learning how to cope within yourself. And, you know, if, say if the client is triggering me or, you know, this client is getting under my skin, like, well, you know, how do I adjust the way that I approach this client in order to best serve them?
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, this is my job. And learning, like I said, like each client will teach you something like that. And I mean, I think that the other thing that I've had to learn is like each client is different.
Yeah.
Each client has different capabilities, and I think that, you know, you know that because you learn it in school, but you almost have to adjust the way that you work with every single client because no client is the same. You know, I may go in and, like you said, like you have a very blunt attitude, like a blunt approach mm-hmm. with your clients. So do I. I'm very blunt with them. Some clients can't handle that.
Yeah.
And you know, it's sometimes, and it's about me taking a step back and being like, okay, how am I going to approach this client? How am I going to change the way that I'm speaking to make them more comfortable? Or, you know, is it about my body language? How do I adjust the way that I'm going to approach this situation as a whole? I'd probably say those are the two biggest things because they're the most challenging.
Right, right. I'm going to ask you what your right to speak's trademark question.
Okay.
What does advocacy mean to you?
It's like a super broad question.
Yes. It's meant to be.
I think that advocacy, like I mean, in one simple statement is being a voice that a youth doesn't have.
Mm.
And if they don't have that voice, then how am I going to help them find it? And I mean, you know, coming down from really small things, teaching them how to advocate for, you know, I need more personal care money because I'm a youth who, you know, I'm African or I'm Caribbean and, you know, my hair money costs more than somebody who's white.
Right.
And I mean, and that was a big thing that happened here about a year ago. Because let's say like hair maintenance for one of our youth right now is way more costly than it would cost me to do my hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that we necessarily took that kind of stuff into consideration a while ago. So I mean, it's small things and it's helping her find her voice. And I mean, one of the clients that I work with right now, came in here and, you know, didn't have a voice, didn't know where to find her voice, didn't know how to stand up for herself, or anything. And I mean, me working with her and almost my attitude rubbing off on her a little bit, I think has helped her, you know, be able to say like, you know, I don't like this.
Right.
Or even to tell people to, like, F off in a nice way. You know what I mean? You know, she's able to stand up for herself. And that's through our simple, meaningful interactions. And, you know, me saying, hey, like, if you don't like this, you need to approach this and you need to say it. And let's practice together. And then her seeing that, you know, I'm going to advocate for you even from small to big things. And I mean, another thing is she's going to be turning 18 soon. So it's like, am I going to advocate for her to stay? Because I think that she potentially could benefit from staying here longer. So it's, you know, advocating at small levels all the way up to a higher level to the government.
Right.
And teaching, you know, youth that you may have, you know, you may be, or you may think that you have a small voice, but like your voice can create change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that. We may title the episode that. I think it's a good way to end. Would you like to say anything else before we end off?
I mean, probably just that as CYCs, I think that each person needs to establish what their role as a CYC is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a CYC is a very different role than, you know, an SSW or, going to the school system, an EA.
Yeah.
Or, you know, social workers, anything like that. So I think that, you know, when new people come into this career, really make it your own.
Mm-hmm.
And really find your voice and, you know, help clients find their voices and continue your education and fight for this career to become accredited because, I mean, obviously CYCs are needed and we're valued. And it's really nice to see clients who are living here right now who have the hopes of being a CYC one day
mm-hmm.
because of the impact that people like you and I have made in their lives.
Thank you for that. Thank you again for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I think it was a great way to start this conversation or continue it. I don't know if anyone else has started it. We started it on the show. Your right to speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. If you are a child or youth that would like to be on the show, or if you have an idea of what topic you think we should be talking about, please email me at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.